Once more unto the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English day.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting second hour of the Personal Wealth Coach on this, the 26th day of October in the year of our Lord, 2113. Anno Domini. Although I think it's supposed to be, what is it called, CE now?
Current era,
yeah,
yes.
Which is like continuing education.
Or which era are we talking about? The current one is only right now.
Well, now, I think it's really funny. The people who changed it to current era don't want to say Anno Domini because it orients on the birth of Christ.
Right, but it's still set the same year.
But, yeah, it's set, so BCE
and
CE. Well, BECE, so current era is defined by the birth of a single person. Well, it's off by about 6 years, but still, it's defined by the birth of a single person. And they think they have really accomplished something by moving it from Anno Domini to...
It is perfectly in line with the traditions of our time, where we are upset about removing the word Christ from Christmas, if somebody writes
right.
Xmas, even
right.
though the
well,
X is a...
stands for Christ.
It's a Christ symbol. It is actually
right.
the way when people would put the X for signing their name, make the sign, that was the sign of the cross. So that X is the sign of the cross. So even, people get upset about Xmas. But what they're missing is the fact that all the days of the week are named after pagan gods.
The X in Greek is chi,
yeah,
which is the beginning, which is the abbreviation for Christ.
Yes.
So Xmas is really still Christmas.
Christmas, yes. And we're upset about that at the same time that we're saying today is Saturday. Oh, that belongs to Saturn.
Oh, we should change that. That's religious.
Sunday. Oh, that's right. The sun guy. The sun god. Monday. Oh, that's the moon goddess. Tuesday. Tuis. Wednesday. Wednesday. That's Woden. Woden's day. That's Odin.
Woden unto
Odin's
thee.
Day.
Yes.
Thursday's Thor's day. Friday's Frigga's day. So we've gone all the way through that. Those are pagan gods that we've got names of the week about,
but
and people are upset about the X in Christmas.
It's sort of a Western civilization equal opportunity god naming, because some of them are Roman gods and some of them are Norse gods. Some are
gods that go across all kinds of cultures.
I think
sun
it's pretty
and moon.
Cool.
Yeah,
yeah, right.
So
actually, they're not really named after the gods. They're named after planets and heavenly bodies.
Frigga and Woden? And
yeah.
Thor? no.
Yeah, they are. And I don't remember. Let's see. Saturn is obviously Saturn. Jupiter and... I read this whole thing about how it's in different cultures.
It's a heavenly bodies.
They would
yeah.
name... their major gods and the planets had the same name, and they're
right.
actually named after the planets, not the gods.
Well, the point that I'm making here, simply, is that we have a tradition in our current era of glossing over things that are old and saying, oh, well, this is, we're going to call it something different, or we're just going to ignore that, and now it's different. Yes! So current era does not mean AD,
cool.
even though it means AD.
Actually, we should probably go back and rename the planets. Because they're all named after religious figures.
Yes, absolutely. We need to go back and rename. Even the name planet means wanderer.
No, it's just a female plan.
Oh, yes. It's a very small plan.
Right. It's a small plan or a female plan.
The rock
anyway,
and rockets.
You are listening,
plan and planets.
You are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach. And the telephone numbers, if you'd like to call in here and talk about something that makes more sense than what we're talking about, which would be a very easy thing.
Very simple.
Would be 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400. And we have a call on 773-1400.
Intrepid caller, you're on the air with Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Morning, gentlemen.
Uh-oh.
Oh, boy. Good morning.
There is a couple of points that y'all covered before the end of the hour that I just can't let stand without some context.
Good, good.
Good.
And the first one being, let's talk about mortgages.
Mm-hmm.
I would not defend a investment banker for pretty much any reason, but the atmosphere or the market was created by the government for low down payments. And for different credit qualifications, I know I was a participant. I was old enough to be involved in that.
Yeah.
I bought a home when I was 19 years
mm-hmm.
old. FHA is the only one that would even talk to me, and
uh-huh.
they would do it for a low down payment, where
That's
savings
right.
and loans would not.
Absolutely.
Correct.
I completely agree with you. How
the Ginnie Mae's and the FHA, Veterans Administration, all that good stuff did not have any significant problems during the downturn in the mortgage world.
And that is the point. We were talking about the mortgage collapse, the mortgage securities collapse. And amazingly, the FHA loans...
they're fine.
Held up very, very well during that period.
Veterans loans held up just fine. It was the areas where... where the government stopped being completely involved, where the, you know, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are in that gray area. That's that the halfway there is where we keep saying that's the problem. When you have halfway there and they're trying to compete against private organizations and yet they still have the government involved.
See, Fannie and Freddie were still requiring 20% down payments.
All the way up to 2007.
They were buying mortgages on the open market. Which were technically AAA rated mortgages.
Yeah, but they were being packaged by investment bankers that really were just putting on insurance instead of actually making good credit. Being
for instance,
the reason,
J.P. Morgan just got through settling for I think it was a total of $13 billion because Countrywide and Bank of America anyway two companies that they purchased Bear Stearns. And Countrywide, both of which, J.P. Morgan did one and Bank of America did another one. Anyway, the companies they purchased were just flat lying about what they packaged into those mortgage securities. I mean, it wasn't anything subtle. They were just lying.
And we may be debating esoteric items here, but there's no question that the mortgage bankers and their excesses led to the collapse.
Correct.
The point is...
no, they were involved in it. I don't think... They were just part of the system.
I think there are so many people to blame. The government was to blame. The investment bankers were to blame. The public was to blame.
I would put the main blame with the public.
Yeah, if you look at the bottom of any mortgage application, there are two signatures or three signatures. There is the banker and there is the... person that is borrowing the money.
Anyway, you started to say something about that. Go ahead.
Well, I was just saying that there's no question that, in my mind at least, that it was the private sector that took advantage of the atmosphere that was created by the government, particularly Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, not FHA or the VA. The government gave the lead for a market for these low down payment, low credit qualifiers.
Fannie and Freddie continued to demand high credit and 20% down payment. So how did they create the mortgage?
Well, they did eventually, and we're talking about 2007, 2008 time frame, at the beginning of the collapse.
Are you sure?
Yeah, because we went on the Lynn Woolley show during that time period, and I said that Fannie and Freddie have just moved to taking zero down payment. That's what I mean about that halfway area, because Fannie and Freddie were not government organizations. They were established by the government, but they were privately run. They had stocks. The people that owned them were their shareholders. The government had some regulations on how they run, and if you looked at their executives, you could see a lot of former government elected types in there. It was kind of a cushy job for them. But that halfway area where they were still under these massive mandates from the government, but also expected to compete on the open market with private organizations that had just been completely deregulated in that same area. That absolutely led to the problem. The fact that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac were involved in the competing for the low interest or higher interest on bad credit but to point at any one place, even when you go back to the Glass-Steagall revoking, that was done with the greatest of intentions. And if you look at the investment bankers, they're saying, well, we'll just put a lot of insurance on this. This is perfect. We're removing the risk for any individual loan giver and spreading it out. We're diversifying. So all these great ideas came together into a stupid mess that if there had been somebody or a large group of people involved in the regulation of it, and this is something that's very important, Alan Greenspan, who has had a lot of the blame pointed at him, went in front of Congress on four different occasions and said that there was a problem in the gray area between the SEC and the Federal Reserve in the mortgage-backed securities market because no one was able to regulate them. Because Glass-Steagall had been removed, the Federal Reserve before that was the one that regulated mortgages. They still did. The SEC regulated the mortgage packages, but that middle ground in between, where the mortgage became a mortgage package, was completely unregulated. And that's the place where all these fines are coming in on the big banks right now, because that middle ground, because it had no regulation, there was a lot of fraud. Right in the middle of that, we had fraud coming from the public saying we have jobs when they didn't. We had fraud coming from mortgage brokers who were saying, please write down that you have a job when you don't. So the number of people to blame is in the many of millions. It's really, the media tries to say, oh, right, there's one person or one group of people and we're just going to blame all of them, because it's a lot easier to say that than to say we were all complicit. We all did this.
Jake and I are in concurrence. And
yeah.
I will make one final point and move on to another subject. You can also, I cannot stand to see the government exempted from this. That's what bothers me.
Yeah.
And it goes all the way back.
Agreed.
Exempted.
There's a fight against banks about redlining, about not making loans in areas in which they had no business making loans.
Right.
All of these things led to this disaster.
Yeah, I think some major fines should be levied against the United States government if they're going to be levying the same fines against the banks, because I think fraud took place on every level.
I don't. When we talk about the government, I have no objection to that. Matter of fact, I lay the lion's share of the responsibility for the collapse at the feet of those leaders that include Robert Rubin, Senator Graham, Alan Greenspan, who were all disciples of Ayn Rand, and
who I have great admiration for.
They blocked any form of securities regulation.
Correct.
On derivatives, and these mortgage bonds were derivatives, and basically once you remove, you provide the opportunity for unlimited profits through borrowing money from guaranteed bank accounts, which is what they were doing, and allow for unlimited profits, and you can run the price as high as you want to run it, and nobody at the governmental level is going to regulate the interstate trade of these things.
Yeah.
Sooner or later, you're going to get massive fraud.
The problem with the movements that were made, and they directed their philosophy learning from Ayn Rand, is they're missing a specific point, and that is if you separate the consequences from the profit, if you separate the risk from the return, then if a bank can make a loan knowing that that loan is not going to pay, but then turn around and sell the loan to somebody else and get all the money for it without any of the risk, we've got some major issues. Self-regulation doesn't take place in those environments.
And that's basically, if you look back, and this you probably remember this too, the savings and loan crisis occurred when we deregulated the savings and loan industry and put them in the position where they were able to compete on interest rates on CDs. And they kept raising the interest rates on CDs and making riskier and riskier loans on real estate. Does this sound familiar?
Very much.
And the public, for some reason, and this is, by the way, the economists call this moral hazard, where the public can go and put their money in a CD, at a savings loan, or a bank, or they can give their money to an insurance company or whatever, and they are absolutely assured they're going to get their money back, even at absurdly high interest rates. And what that does is it creates a situation where there is the money that is coming in short term that keeps liquidity in the institution, that keeps the institution profitable. But the institution has to reach for higher and higher and higher interest rates. And there is a fundamental law here, and that is the higher the rate, the greater the risk. And when you think you can get a high rate with no risk, by definition, something is going to blow up.
That's, you know, when we talked about, we've got CDs of our radio program from 2006 and 2007.
And what bank?
Oh, not that kind
Are
of CD.
Are they FDIC insured?
Compact disc.
Oh, okay.
And we said over and over and over again, it didn't take a rocket surgeon to look at the fact that we had 9% AAA loans. You can't have a AAA loan in a 9% area when the environment for a true AAA loan is 5 or 6%.
Yeah.
You can't do that. There's something fundamentally broken. We didn't have to break apart the loan and say, here's where the problem is. We can just point at the percentage and say that's too high.
And one of the keys there is unregulated insurance. And we still got that, by the way. I think that's our next collapse.
Yeah. It's the same thing that I was talking about
earlier. State insurance programs.
State insurance programs, whether it's health insurance, life insurance, mortgage insurance, it doesn't matter. There is no across-the-board regulation. All you have to do is move to a different state, and you've got completely different laws. Well, that's a problem.
Since you mentioned health care, that would be my second point. As we were, Jeff was speaking to exemptions, waivers, whatever, of the Affordable Care Act.
Right.
Congress and their aides were most assuredly granted exemptions, I believe unlawfully, call it what you will, waiver, taxpayer subsidies for which they didn't qualify.
I would disagree with you on that.
I think I agree with the concept of it, but when you're talking about Congress, all they have to do is rewrite the law a little bit, and suddenly the unlawful thing that they were about to do became lawful.
What happened in with Congress, and this is let's step away from the exact wording of the law here for just a moment. People who work in the Congress of the United States are federal employees. And to state that they would not get the same, that the aides and clerks and people who take the trash out for Congress should get a different benefits package than other federal employees is, in my opinion, inappropriate. Now, the Democrats did put a separate package in there. And then, in essence, the president said, that particular package is stupid. It doesn't work. The law gives me the right to waive that and put the federal employees in the Congress on the same health care program as the rest of the federal employees working for the United States government. And he did. And that was the objection.
Except for the amendment to the Affordable Health Care Act that said it would apply to Congress directly.
Mm-hmm.
And it does not.
This is an interesting point. You say apply to Congress directly. It also applies directly to every other citizen of the United States. The point that I want to make here is that the situation in Congress right now is the members of Congress and the employees of Congress have exactly the same health care benefits as other federal employees. And there's an objection to that. If there is, I don't know why we're objecting to it. Yes, there was a provision in the bill that was authorized in the bill to be waived by the president. And believe me, if it wasn't, it'd be in court right now and it'd be in the headlines. To require Congress, actually it gave staffers and members of Congress better health care than the public, than a regular federal employee. And that was removed by the president. I mean, he was authorized to waive that provision, and he did. So now they got exactly the same health care as any other federal employee. Don't see anything wrong with
I'll give you the actual numbers here because the Washington Post did a fact check on this. Most of the people that are talking about this are talking about Steve Scalise, who's a Republican congressman from Louisiana. On CNN said that this is his quote: "The president has exempted over 1,200 groups, including members of Congress, from the health care law. The reality is, Health and Human Services granted 1,231 companies and other organizations a temporary, it's a one-year waiver on replacing plans that existed there. The waivers were granted to companies, and McDonald's was one of them. They provided an inexpensive bare-bone health plan known as MiniMeds, and they said they didn't have to get rid of those right away. That's the exemption that took place. If somebody already had a plan that met the criteria. Now, me saying that, and I have to be very careful here. I'm going to say it clearly. Me saying that is not me defending the Affordable Care Act. That act itself needs to be fixed. There are so many things wrong with the act.
And we all agree that there's things wrong with the act.
But I have a very big pet peeve in if there are already plenty of problems with the law, to come out and make an exaggeration about one of them removes the credibility to pointing out the other problems with the law.
Well, you know, one of the nice things about the law is that Health and Human Services had the right under the law to issue that waiver. I mean, it's in the law. There's a flexibility. I mean, an awful lot of things that come out of Congress and out of the federal government.
Here's the waiver.
No flexibility.
The waiver is, and this is what it fell into for the vast majority of these just over 1,200 companies. And the waiver said that in the year 2013, any health care plan out there had to cover with no annual coverage limits. And in 2013, it can't be lower than $750,000. Well, some of these were in the $500,000, some of them were in the $800,000, and some of them were somewhere in between. They gave a waiver for 1 year to get these plans, which were under construction at the time and are still under construction, some time to come out with something better, something to say, okay, unlimited, without completely distorting the whole environment.
Caller, we don't think the plan is perfect. Don't misunderstand that for a second. What I have asked, and in fact, I wrote John Carter about it, and he wrote me back with a response that obviously got crossed in the mail or something somewhere, because he was obviously responding to something I didn't say anything about. But I even wrote John Carter, and I said, look, I'm a Republican. I would like the Republican Party to survive. Don't just say do away with Obamacare, because you've already got millions of people covered under Obamacare who you would be instantly stripping of their health insurance. That's not exactly a very good solution. So why don't we come up with something better?
The Republicans have the ability to come up with something better.
Come up with fixes?
They're the ones that came up with the ideas behind this to begin with. They have the ability to come up with the fixes. Right now, Congress, the Republicans in Congress are just saying, no, we must remove it all. That is not a solution.
And the other thing is, and this is a little strange, from a purely practical point of view, that's simply not possible at this point. It wasn't possible when they made that end run at it earlier. I mean, look, for example, if Obamacare were suddenly defunded and no longer existed,
healthcare costs would go up right now.
Not only that,
and let me explain,
it's questionable whether hospitals could stay open.
Yeah, let me explain that, because it sounds like I'm just making a broad defense of the law. I'm not. One of the first things to be implemented about the Affordable Care Act was covering people who were no longer minors but still were not capable of buying their own insurance.
Right.
Between the ages of 18 and 25. Those people are now covered under their parents' plan. And we've got millions of people that we're talking about here.
Mm-hmm.
This is also one of the most healthy groups in the country, which means what we saw in the original implementation, the very early implementations of the Affordable Care Act, is we saw insurance rates actually dropped. This is why. If we reversed Obamacare, we would have immediate rate increases, because we'd be removing a very healthy group from the insurance market. They wouldn't be getting insurance. This is one of the things that can be discussed and debated at great length, but if you look to prior to this change, that group was by and large uninsured, and that brought down the rates. So,
I don't know whom y'all are insured with, but I have faced 30 to 35% increases in my health insurance each of the last 3 years. But I've seen no rate decrease.
We are through, and we'll just come right out and say that. Our business, we get our insurance through Scott & White Health Plan. And we saw during the last year a flat rate, and that's the first time in a decade. It's been 10 years, and every year we've seen a 10 to 30% increase in the health insurance.
And we look nationwide, by the way, on insurance rates, and there's a very, very different numbers depending on where you look, and you can dig down a little deeper and you can figure out pretty quickly why the numbers are like they are. For example, when the recession hit, insurance rates went up. Now, they don't go up the year that
the
expenses go up. They go up the following 2 to 3 years.
Correct.
And it's because an awful lot of people who were laid off, who are critically ill and could not get regular insurance, kept their employment insurance through COBRA and other systems. And the end result was you had what's called a massive adverse selection in the insurance marketplace, where sick people kept their insurance and healthy people didn't. And that caused, across the board, in a lot of places, insurance rates to go up. However, now this is a very interesting point here. I just read this a couple of days ago. The states that accepted the federal funding and applied it to people have seen their insurance rates go down substantially.
No.
And the states that rejected out of principle, Texas being one, the federal funding to pay for the low-end people's insurance and increase their Medicaid coverage as a result, have seen the ones who didn't do that have seen the insurance rates go up significantly across the board for employers and private policies.
Now let me come in defense of those people now real quick.
Okay.
Because right now we're seeing an increase, Texas being one of those states.
Right.
However, in 6 years, when the funding from the federal government stops,
well,
we're not going to have that increase that probably will be seen in the rest of the country.
The point is, I don't know that it's going to stop in 6 years. Once the states start making transfer payments, or the federal government starts making transfer payments to the states, they've never stopped
before. Yes, they have in Medicaid. Medicaid payments started, and a lot of times the federal government will say, here's your Medicaid payment.
Huge payments.
And the states accept that money, at which point the unfunded mandates come in that say you've got to provide
sure.
this stuff.
And it may be that 6 years from now there might be a problem if Texas accepted the money from the federal government.
This is
to expand Medicaid.
Right. But this is exactly the point that
I'm saying that's why rates in Texas have gone up.
Right. This is exactly the point that I'm bringing up here. You have pointed out a rate increase, and I'm talking about later on effects. This law, and the health industry in particular, is so complex that it does not lend itself well to sound bites. The things that are easy to make sound bites about are increases in rates or decreases in rates. If someone just makes a blanket statement about increases in rates or a blanket statement about decreases in rates, they're wrong. Because there's too much information that needs to be given to give full disclosure when making that statement. I don't think that either side has the bad interest of the country in mind. I think they both want good things for the country, and that's debatable, I'm sure. But, caller, you had something you were going to say?
Well, I would just, there's no question. I don't think anybody that is not comatose argues that our insurance didn't need tremendous reform and moving in some fashion. The way that the desire of the progressive side of the aisle has been since World War II and remains single payer. And eventually that's where we're headed, just as surely as the other.
I'm not at all convinced that that is.
If we can get the marketplace working, you're saying that.
Yeah, I don't think we're headed towards single payer. I think. Yeah, there's the left wing would love to have a single payer system like Canada's or something, but there's so much resistance to it. And I think there is.
That's part of the plan here, though, Jeff. I mean, let's recognize that this is going to be a mess. I have 20 some odd employees, and out of those 20 some employees, four of them either carry health insurance and always have, and the remainder of them not only have never carried it, they have no intention of carrying it. All they're going to do is pay the fine.
Well, this is a good answer to that. One of the previous callers talked about how the Democrats were able to pass this through. I mentioned that it didn't have a single Republican vote in the House.
Yep.
They had the opportunity at that point because they had it all there. They didn't have enough Democrat votes to pass a single-payer system. And if the marketplace works well and we have true competition in the insurance world and the rates respond to that, we're not going to a single-payer system. However, if the government keeps falling on its face in the technological world, if we still have problems, all bets are off.
Every other developed nation on the planet has a single-payer system. The United States is the exception, and we've started with a marketplace system. If the marketplace system works, which I hope it does.
And I think it has the possibility of working far better than any of the others.
Then I think we will have a uniquely American way of doing it that, as I said, was developed by Ronald Reagan.
Nixon actually was the first. Reagan used Nixon stuff.
Okay.
Yeah, Ben Stein, Ben Stein, was involved in the pinning of Nixon's healthcare plan.
It was a Republican idea from the beginning to avoid a demographic near certainty that at some point everybody needs to have health insurance, and to not have the government be the sole provider of health insurance, but rather establish marketplaces where people could buy health insurance. And, of course, the problem is with insurance theory is that you've got to ensure that everybody gets it or it's going to be outrageously expensive, which is what we're dealing with now. And, yeah, I personally think the enforcement mechanism is weak. And the reason the enforcement mechanism is so weak, by the way, is, again, because the Democrats did not want to be in the position where they were going to, and I'll put quotations around this, hurt the little guy, end quote. We gotta have a better enforcement mechanism.
We gotta have a better anti-fraud mechanism. We have to have a better marketplace mechanism. We have to have more clearly understood regulations. We have to cover all of the holes and mess ups. But what I see happening in the political world right now isn't how do we deal with the situation and make it better. It's how do we go back to the past that really didn't exist, because the government was involved before this law, and that's a problem that I have with the current Congress. They're looking at revoking the law and going back to a broken mess without a solution. We need a solution. We've got part of a solution in Obamacare. But it's not the whole thing.
No, and I will move on and let y'all cover other subjects. I guess I will just...
But it's a good discussion, though.
But that Jeff has a whole lot more faith in the ability of government to run things than I do.
No, I don't really. That's the point. I like the idea of having a free marketplace. I really like it. And that's what, you know, and by the way, in order for us to have a free marketplace in securities, the government has to regulate it.
Yeah.
And in order for us to
regulate, but not run.
In order for us to not be, I don't know if you're familiar with these numbers, but we're killing about the same number of people on highways today that we were killing when the automobile safety laws were passed.
There's a lot of people.
We're driving. We have almost twice as many people on the highways. And even more importantly, we're driving about 10 times the number of miles.
And when you compare our death rate on the highway to that of Germany, Germany is way off the charts.
The death rate has remained level. And by the way, it's starting to drop now this year. For the first time, it's starting to actually drop below where it was back then. And that's because of the Federal Highway Safety Act that was passed. That includes the fact that they regulated how cars were manufactured. I don't know if you remember the horrible, horrible objections to that. What's the federal government doing regulating how an automobile is manufactured? But the point is...
I would just end it by saying I'm certainly not an anarchist, but I am a believer in limited government, obviously.
Absolutely.
As are we.
As our founders pointed out, you know, government would not be necessary if men were angels.
Correct.
And, you got that.
But there is at some point...
If men were angels, we would all be communist, but we're not. Do you get free riders?
Wait a minute. You got to be careful with that one.
at some point, we all become serfs to the government rather than the freedom-loving people that we've been all.
There we disagree. I think that the American way of doing things is we gradually adjust and ultimately wind up implementing government where it needs to be and not implementing it where it doesn't need to be. And I think we've swung from one side to the other a little bit, but I think we have made some very, very good progress and are continuing to do so. We regulate, we deregulate.
I have some points here that I can make very clearly. We've had an increase in freedom over the last 50 years.
Yeah.
Our specific freedoms, the things that we as individuals are allowed to do, are much greater. We're allowed to burn a United States flag now.
Yeah, and
when the government before said, we will put you in jail for a long period of time for burning a flag.
Right. And I'll guarantee that 50 years ago, had you walked down the street, and if we'd had M16s, with an M16, you'd go to prison.
Right. You would go to prison. And now today, we look at it and say, that is not something you're going to go to prison. Now, if you go back 200 years, you could have walked down a street with a fully military rifle without going to jail because you needed it, because there were military attacks going on all the time.
I hate to break this to you, but they didn't have rifles 200 years ago. They only had muskets.
That's true. Muskets. Right. They very few rifles. If they were rifled at all, then they were cutting edge.
It was an accident.
I will bid y'all adieu.
Okay. Thank you very much for your call. We really enjoy your calls, by the way. You have good, thoughtful approaches to this.
Yes.
You have a good day, okay?
Appreciate the call. Right,
bye-bye. And we've got a bunch of commercials to play. You are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach. We have this grand debate. I do want to clarify something. Both of us are in favor of limited government.
Very much so.
We're in favor of truth, though. And when I wanted to make this comment last hour, and I'm going to finish it before we do the commercials. Here's an example of what's going on in the media. It's going on, when I say the media, I mean include internet emails and everything else.
Everything.
You really need to research this stuff. There was an article, and I'm going to use CNN because they're very unpopular around here. This happens on Fox, too.
But it happens everywhere.
But there were big sensationalist story that appeared on, I was following a story that wound up at CNN. I actually started in the Wall Street Journal, wound up looking at CNN's website. And there was this down in the corner off to the side or something, this big thing. And it shows these two aircraft interposed over each other, two 747s. How did two 747s get within 100 feet of each other and with thousands of people on board or hundreds or something like that?
Nearly colliding.
And it was a very sensational article. I read the article. I thought that's pretty weird. I thought I would have heard about that. It turned out that these two aircraft, they turned the wrong way after two different pilots that were at the same altitude, and the one that was told to turn left turned right, and the one that was told to turn right turned left, and they were going on and on about this and how they were with, and the reporter said they were within 100 feet of each other. Well, in fact, if you read the article very carefully, they were 3 miles apart, the two aircraft, they were flying almost parallel with each other.
But they were 100 feet in elevation separated.
But they were actually assigned to the same altitude, and they got within 3 miles of each other, and they were 100 feet in difference in altitude. At that point, alarms went off in the air traffic control center and on the aircraft. And they were issued automatically, and by the way, this is computerized. One of them was told to climb. One of them was told to descend immediately. And they did. The closest they got was 3 miles. But the headline, and if you read everything except the last two paragraphs of the story, you would have thought two 747s full of passengers
came within 100 feet of each other.
Came within 100 feet of each other, and this simply was not true.
And there's one other piece, and this is, we talked about this at the end of last hour. I had something to add to that particular subject, and that's this. One of the major media headlines was that at the current rate, we will hit a $22 trillion debt in February. And that's insane. That's totally insane. I looked at that and I went, what are they talking about? And what they were talking about is the first day after the federal government opened and the debt ceiling was raised, a lot of expenses came due that had been put off during the emergency put-off period, when they're doing their any measures possible. One of the things that the Treasury Department had to do was stop funding the federal employee retirement system. It's a big pension system that you're supposed to put money in every month. Well, they didn't do that for a period of about 4 months. Well, as soon as the debt ceiling got raised, all the Postal Service, the FERS, all of these big pension funds that the government runs got funded. So if you look at the first day, we're talking about 300 some odd billion dollars, and then you take that for every day for till February, and you say you just do that amount every day till February, yeah, that would be $22 trillion, and that's insane. But that's not how the world works. And when you have a headline that says that, it's a very misleading headline.
And we have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Good morning, guys. I would like to know your ideas and your thoughts and maybe your forecast for the U.S. stock market to the end of the year. I'm going to hang up.
All right. Thank you. Up.
Up. Yes.
It's that time of year. Massive amounts of money are pouring into equity mutual funds. And this is the time of year when the market rises. Forecast, I can't tell you exactly, but I can tell you that the only thing that's holding the market from rising probably another 20 or 30% total, although I don't think it's going to rise that by the end of the year.
Not all at once, right?
Of course, I didn't think at the beginning of the year it would rise as much either. It's up about 20% now for the year. Is the uncertainty in Washington. Now, if we could eliminate the potential suicide pact with the debt ceiling, and believe me, there's actually a caucus in the House of Representatives that refer to themselves as the suicide caucus now.
Oh, man.
It's the people who voted against raising the debt ceiling. By the way, our congressman is a member. It's an informal caucus. It doesn't have a formal, but they call themselves the suicide pact caucus. They are willing to blow up the government, if necessary, to get what they want, and which I think is a little odd, but it's democracy. We get whatever we want. But other than that, corporate earnings are doing very well. What'd you say Microsoft is
18% rise in earnings.
Has risen from the dead, folks.
And it's going to continue. I mean, it's moved over into the smaller market. It's got, the smaller tablet-type market, not PCs. And they have the ability and the infrastructure to quickly come up with a very precise methodology for moving forward there.
And fundamentally, I hear a lot of negative. I'm seeing some evidence of positive, and I was saying we're at the inflection point right now where the market has recovered from the collapse.
Otherwise known as new records being hit.
And now it is in the position of doing some honest growth. The only thing that's standing, in my opinion, and all the numbers support this, the only thing that's standing in the way of some real decent economic growth in the United States and some real decent growth in the market is the budget uncertainty. If we can, in somehow, the next elections or whatever, we can get past this and get back to passing regular budgets and getting things under control slowly, everything will be cool. We got a break for commercials, though. You are listening to The Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And if I can remember how to start the commercials here while talking at the same time, which may be a bit much.
Would you like to chew some gum as well?
I don't like gum.
Some juggling?
Right. Well, we'll be back for a few minutes on the other side of these commercials. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach without the bumper music.
We're running out of time.
Hey, I wanted to say something before we went off the air. We have less than 4 minutes left. And that is, there's obviously the stock market is up, and we're trying to make this show, among other things, which we're recording on 10/26. We're trying to make it in a manner that makes sense if it's played another time. But there's something I do want to warn you about, and I've talked about that a few minutes ago as dangerous back when. It's still dangerous, and that is high interest rates on money that you loan to somebody. In this case, The Economist has an excellent article in its current edition that refers to Puerto Rico as the Greece of the Caribbean. And the role being played in this drama, if Puerto Rico is Greece, we are the European Union. And the problem is that Puerto Rico is in some rather severe economic straits right now, and it's getting worse for several reasons. Congress cut off some tax subsidies for down there. Basically, they were allowing people to produce goods and services down there without paying taxes, and Congress has cut that off, and that's interesting. But the key is municipalities in Puerto Rico are routinely paying 10% on municipal bonds. And people think, well, I'll get insurance on the municipal bond and I'll get a 10% bond from Puerto Rico, tax-free, wonderful. The problem with that, folks, is the insurance companies, that are issuing the insurance to cover these bonds are on the verge of insolvency themselves. And any time that you get an interest rate on a bond that is higher than the given market interest rate should be on that bond, you are at extreme risk of losing your money. It makes about as much sense as the people who bought government securities from Greece, who, by the way, wound up losing about 90% of their money. So I just say, anytime somebody offers you a better than market rate interest rate on anything, you are at great risk for losing your money. Don't bite on that. And this has been the Personal Wealth Coach. We're about out of time for today, October 26th. I suspect this will be running next week since we won't be on the air.
Yeah.
We'll be out of town. I'll be out looking at stars, and you'll be doing something else.
New
silly.
Orleans.
Nolens. He's looking at Nolens, and I'm going to be out in the desert looking at clouds and
with
galaxies.
A horse,
and
on a horse like with that. No name?
No. No horse. Well, I'll be in a, you know,
in
right.
a camper with no
right,
name.
Right.
No name. Yeah.
But this has been the Personal Wealth Coach, and we certainly appreciate your, if you have listened to us.
If not, then we're not thanking you anyway.
And the Personal Wealth Coach is also an SEC-registered investment advisory firm located in Salado, Texas. We do manage portfolios for people who have a significant amount of money and need our help, and we do so in a relatively scientific manner. You're certainly welcome to give us a call during the week, or you can leave a voicemail message on the weekend if there's something you'd like us to carry on the air or something you'd like to talk to us about. Locally, we're at, of course, 254 is the area code, 947-1111.
You can also reach us toll-free. Again, voicemail is waiting there at 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. You can email us at jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com. Or you can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com. Listen to podcasts. If you didn't get enough of insanity this weekend, you can go and listen to your heart's content and your psychiatrist's nightmares. In the meantime, hopefully this program will do well next week as well. It seems to be pretty loosely based, so...
That was the thought. You know?
Yeah.
We didn't even mention the fact that the market was up last week in the S&P 500 at records because, you know, this could, like, change.
Yeah, it could change between now and then.
The
Until
market,
next week.
The market does go down.
News Radio 1400 KTEM. Serving Central Texas, KTEM AM. Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood.